Now, it is one of the enduring questions of modern medicine. Why are rates of childhood allergies continuing to rise around the globe? Australia has the highest confirmed rates of allergy per capita in the globe, in the world. And here's another alarming finding. In this country, for children up to the age of four, rates of anaphylaxis went up more than fivefold between 1994 and 2005. So where are we up to in truly knowing the causes of these allergic reactions, and is there anything we can do to reduce the risks? Dr. Vincent Ho is a gastroenterologist whose new book is called The Healthy Baby Gut Guide. And Vincent, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you, Michael.
Vincent, understanding the link between allergies and the gut became something of a personal mission as well as a professional one for you, because one of your children has had allergic reactions. Tell us about your daughter, Olivia.
Yeah, that's right. So Olivia is just now over 5 years old, but when she was around 6 months, we were at a yum cha restaurant with our extended family, and we were sampling an egg tart, which is a delicacy at the restaurant, fed a little bit of it to Olivia. And the time we were introducing her to a range of solid foods, I didn't think anything of it. But after a few minutes, we noticed a rash spreading over her lips, and then it started to spread over her face, and she started becoming wheezy. She looked uncomfortable. I thought she looked like she might be in pain. And certainly I started getting very stressed out. I started to look out for anything, any kind of medical aid that I could have. But at that time in that restaurant, there was nothing.
I think there was calls terrifying. Out for an EpiPen, but no EpiPen available.
I did call out for an EpiPen.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
So it's something I'm aware of. But, you know, as a medical specialist, I normally have all these resources around me. But in that environment, I had nothing. And I was terrified, and it was actually one of the most harrowing experiences I've ever experienced. The good news is we got her to the hospital, and luckily her reaction began to subside. So eventually she was able to be assessed as stable and discharged, but it was an extremely stressful time for me. And it was actually a time, Michael, that made me really think about what was going on here. Why was this reaction occurring in my daughter?
Yes.
And then I resolved to research this.
And at the time, Olivia was how many months old?
She was 6 months old.
6 months old. So a perfectly reasonable time to introduce solids and even a bit of egg to a young child's diet.
That's exactly right. And so, and I'm aware of the fact that many parents may feel the same way, that when they're introducing foods for the first time to their children, they're often quite wary about the fact that the reactions can occur. I mean, for myself, I didn't anticipate that this would occur, but after it did occur, it was a really motivating factor, Michael, to start investigating, finding out why this has happened.
So you've actually done some meta-analysis of a lot of research around allergy and reactions to allergens around the globe, and based, I guess, on not only your personal experience with Olivia, but also the kinds of advice you want to give other people who come and see you about this very stuff. So let's talk about one of the common theories around why allergies are on the rise, and that is we live in too much of a hygienic environment. We don't build up resistance early enough to microbes and allergens. You actually in your book say that there may be some validity in this, but it's not what it seems.
That's right. So as a bit of background, lifestyle changes we know in industrialized societies like ours, there's more sterile urban environments, more time spent indoors. And so what that has meant is less exposure to microbes and germs, especially the children. And we're seeing, of course, a rise in the prevalence of childhood allergies. So the hygiene hypothesis is that idea that early childhood exposure to particular microbes can protect kids against the development of allergic diseases. Now, the name itself, hygiene hypothesis, I think is a bit misleading, because you might think, Michael, that it's about adopting unhygienic practices, but that's not the case at all. I mean, of course, you've got to continue to wash your hands and practice sanitation measures. And I'd actually be the first to support that, because I'm actually quite interested in infectious gastroenteritis. But we also know that when you're exposed to disease-causing microbes, such as viruses in childhood, that can actually increase the risk of developing allergies, such as asthma. So the hygiene hypothesis has actually been more accurately reframed as the old friend's hypothesis. So that's the idea that there are old friend good microbes in the natural environment that we've been exposed to in the past, but our kids' gut aren't getting exposed to anymore because of environmental changes or because we're raising our children in very sterile urban environments.
So in the book, you start to trace back when it is that we should be exposing our children to some of these old friends. And you even suggest that it should be while the child is still in the womb.
Absolutely. And we know that during pregnancy, and this is what was really interesting when I did the research, found that exposure to a farming environment during pregnancy has been shown to reduce the risk of childhood allergies. It came from a very big study in Europe that found that mothers that were pregnant, if they were exposed to farming environments, and particularly if they had exposure to stables, there was a significant reduction in the risk of their children having allergies. So it was very interesting. What's also important is that during pregnancy, having good nutrition, so vitamin D supplements if required, and also taking oily fish, which are full of those good omega-3 fatty acids, that can all help to reduce the risk of childhood allergies. So there are things that you can do in the womb to reduce childhood allergies.
Do we know what existence or not there is of microbes in the womb, in the placenta, in the amniotic fluid before a child is born?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And in fact, there was a lot of research on this back in 2014, thinking that the womb itself is full of some good microbes. But what we know from the research is that actually the womb is considered to be quite sterile, apart from the occasion where you might get infections and they can be very serious. So we know that the latest research is that the baby is born with a sterile gut, but that there are powerful influences, particularly during delivery, that help to shape the makeup of the baby's gut. For example, if a baby is born via a vaginal delivery, we know that their gut microbes come from the mother's vagina. We also know that if a baby is born by a cesarean section, then a lot of their microbes are skin-based microbes that are found in the gut.
That's really interesting. And if you just joined this conversation, my guest is Dr. Vincent Ho. He's a gastroenterologist and author of the Healthy Baby Gut Guide. So, Vincent, in describing what happens at the time of birth compared to in the womb and how microbe-free that environment seems to be, I'm wondering, why does a pregnant woman going to a farm influence a baby's allergic health?
That's a very, very good question.
Good.
It's a very good question. And what we know about that is that there are factors on a farm that are really relevant in terms of helping to reduce the risk of allergies. I mentioned before about the old friend microbes, and we know that those old friend microbes are around in farming environments. So they can be bacteria like mycobacteria that have been around for a long time and found in soil and water. But we also know, and this is an interesting part here too, that there are actually what we call exotoxins that are present in the environment. You think, you know, what is that? Is that a nasty thing, exotoxins or endotoxins? Well, we know that these particular toxins, which in particular endotoxins, which are found in the wall of bacteria when they die, so they're actually released when bacteria die, they can be found everywhere in the environment, including like the indoors. And so what we're finding is that these endotoxin levels, they're actually particularly high in farm stables where, you know, you keep livestock and poultry. And it's certainly one thought is that certainly living on a farm and being exposed to these endotoxins along with microbes could be quite helpful in preventing allergies developing during childhood. But there is one catch, and because the research is that if you're exposed to endotoxins later in life, there is some research that suggests that can worsen allergies like asthma and hay fever if you already have them. So often it's about getting exposure to endotoxin early in life that actually makes a difference. So that's one of the theories behind why the farming environment may be helpful in reducing allergies.
You also describe and explain very well, I think, in the book that, you know, genetic history has a risk factor role to play. So if you are someone who's been allergic to various parts of the environment, there is a greater risk that you will pass that on to your child. That may be the case. And if both parents are, then the risk goes up. So let's assume that as being kind of fact, that's already there and established as a risk factor. When it comes to our current state of cleanliness because of pandemic, are you worried that we may see a corresponding surge in allergic reaction?
Michael, that's a great question. And I don't know anyone, I don't think anyone knows 100%, but we can make some important observations.
That's from Vince, by the way, that came from Vincent on text, and hats off.
Okay. One is that hand washing is here to stay. And I think it should be the case. If I completely support that and we should continue to do hand washing, COVID or no COVID. But when it comes to social distancing, this is the interesting part. So the hygiene hypothesis was first formulated after an observational study in the United Kingdom found that the more siblings a child has, the less risk he or she has of developing eczema and allergic rhinitis. The presumed mechanism here is that close contact between children allows for transmission of these good old friend microbes, which can then confer that immune protective benefit. So after, let's say that in the future we have a vaccine, hopefully in the near future, if we find that social distancing is still entrenched, particularly within families as a result of COVID-19 behavioral change, then I think we may well see a surge in childhood allergies. We should start seeing this in a few years' time if this proves to be the case. So I would say watch this space.
Okay. Let's talk about afterbirth and eating regimes. And I'm thinking here again about what happened with your daughter Olivia at the age of 6 months. So many parents now are terrified of what allergic reactions could look out there in introducing solid food to a baby after the age of 6 months. And you advocate breastfeeding all the way up until 6 months because of the kind of resistance to allergies that comes with that practice. But after 6 months, when you introduce solids, what is the current research saying about how we introduce potentially allergic reaction causing foods like nuts or dairy?
Yeah, so for a long time, it used to be thought that we should hold off on some of those allergenic foods until the kid is about around 2 to 3 because it allows more time for their immune system to mature. But now we know there is strong data to support the introduction of allergenic foods like peanuts in the first year of life. In my book, I talk about a meal plan to introduce the introduction of 9 most common allergenic foods within the first year of life, between 6 months and 12 months.
Just quickly, if we may, Vincent, just quickly outline how you do that within the diet you suggest.
Yeah. So what is really important here is about having a consistent plan of introducing allergies. So if you're introducing an allergenic food, it should be introduced at a particular time during the day. So ideally during the morning or at lunchtime. So it's consistent. It should be introduced in a way that allows for clear observation. So during daylight hours, as I said, is ideal. We should also, when introducing foods, monitor closely for a reaction. So typically with a food allergy, we'll see a reaction anywhere between a few minutes up to about 2 hours after the ingestion of the food. So we should be very alert for that.
And Vincent, if there is a reaction, what should we do? Should we immediately cease feeding that food to our babies?
Absolutely. So immediately stop that. And if there's concern, of course, that's when you can see an allergist for specific testing. But in introducing foods, what is very important is introduce it in very small amounts first. So we're talking about here that you should be basically introducing a tiny amount of food to the baby. So you can have, for example, a little bit on your index finger to put on the tip of your baby's lip, so the bottom lip, to sort of witness for a reaction. And then you can slowly increase the amount that you're feeding the baby after waiting for about half an hour between intervals. So, for example, you might want to be giving a quarter of a teaspoon, for example, of peanut butter, and then you wait another half an hour, and you might give another half a teaspoon.
Introduce early, but easy does it, and watch very carefully for results. Vincent, it's been a pleasure to have you on the program, and hopefully these kinds of pieces of medically researched advice will give some parents pause for thought and maybe some confidence as well. Dr. Vincent Ho, gastroenterologist and author of the Healthy Baby Gut Guide.